Chapter 1. His Origins in Fire. He lay naked in the heartblood of his world. Surrounded by fire, uncurling from fetal slumber, he should have been dead. Smoke from venting fumaroles shrouded his slowly waking form, drifting across skin that glistened like polished onyx. Neither scar nor burn marred his body as he emerged from the cradle of lava as easily as a man might step from a glacial pool. He was pristine, renewed, untouched despite the heat. The air throbbed with it, redolent of ash and cinder, impossible to breathe. Yet he breathed. He lived. Though uninjured and fully matured, he took wary steps as if relearning how to walk. He regarded hands roughened by physical labor. Much larger than a mortal man's hands, they belonged to a giant, one who had been asleep for a long time, like in a fable of old. And here, too, he knew, just like in the old tales, there were dragons. Rough-hewn steps, little more than heaped slabs, led out of the lava cauldron and down to an umber-hued plateau of igneous rock, where a cloak of drake hide lay unfurled like a blanket. The giant didn't know how it had come to be there, only that it was meant for him. So, as he gained the plateau and reached the cloak, he took it, sweeping it across his brawny shoulders. His eyes burned within the shadow of the garment's hood, taking stock of the mountain. A great crag rose up from the plateau, jagged and forbidding, its summit lost in clouds of smoke and sulphur. Veins of obsidian ran through it like the tributaries of an immense river. At the foot of the crag, they spread to the plateau, and here the rock resembled a map of ancient ley lines. The giant traced one line with his finger, as if he could read its story by touch alone. A deep roar reverberated through the plateau, felt in his outstretched hand, the steady refrain of shifting earth and the stirring of ancient beasts. They too were giants. They too slept, but would perhaps never awaken. He felt their glowering tolerance of him, a threat too weary or uninterested to manifest. This feeling provoked a memory, prompting the giant to reach for the shard of stone jutting from his chest. He had almost forgotten it was there, as though it were an unseen splinter, only now beginning to irritate the skin. His fingers had barely caressed its rough edges when a voice said, "You have been here for several days, Vulcan." The giant turned, eyes burning bright, as forbidding as any devil. "This chamber, vast as it is, has been your tomb and your forge," said a wizened old man. He was crouched atop a spear tip of rock that thrust from the lava sea surrounding the plateau. Smoke and heat haze swam upwards from this spike, obscuring the old man momentarily, but he was there, watching. He was real. The giant moved his lips. The act of speaking felt unfamiliar at first, as if it too were being relearned.
"I am Vulcan."
A fresh waft of cinder followed this revelation, harsh and acerbic. He had not framed it as a question. The old man slowly nodded. He grasped a wooden staff to a rangy body fastidiously wrapped in a tribesman's garb. The staff looked gnarled and thin, akin to its bearer, whose feet were unshod and whose skin was almost as dark as the giant's. Soot marked his face, ritualistic in some way that Vulcan knew but had forgotten. Old eyes narrowed. They were almond-shaped, an iridescent blue. Vitality at odds with an elderly frame flashed in them.
"Who are you?" asked Vulcan, suspicious.
"I am Deathfire," said the old man,
and gave a shallow but respectful bow.
"My lord of drakes."
"Deathfire is this mountain," said Vulcan, gesturing to the vast chamber around them.
The old man nodded again.
"Yes, I am the mountain, and it is me."
"Is that how you are alive?"
"Let us say yes, for it is a far simpler explanation than the alternative."
"How do you know my name?"
"I know it in the same way that I know you have been down here for several days, Vulcan.
This is the deepest forge. You call it the Maw, a place known only to you and the mountain that keeps it. Others' fathers may come to know it in time, but for now just you. He smiled indulgently. Vulcan frowned.
I do not understand.
His fingers strayed to the shard in his chest. The old man unfurled a little from his perch to gesture at the shard with his staff.
A shard, of a shard, of a shard, he said cryptically.
That wounded you. It killed you for a while.
Am I dead then?
Asked Vulcan, his hand falling away from the shard as if to touch it might bring death anew.
Is this the underworld?
It is certainly hellish enough to be one, eh? The old man smiled.
No, far from it. You are reborn, Vulcan.
He pointed to the cradle from where Vulcan had emerged. It crested a pillar of rock, one protruding from the lava sea and linked to the plateau by a stairway. The lava within the cradle bubbled and spat, congealing in thick syrupy folds, a crust of dark rock cracking and splitting on its surface before being consumed.
I have watched you enter the fire and emerge over and again. You would rise, reach the plateau, and then go back. Never before did you reach the crag or take up your old mantle. Only the hammer.
Vulcan regarded the drakehide cloak. He pulled it tighter about him.
What hammer?
He asked. But his eyes had already strayed from the old man to a thin tract of stone that led from the plateau to an archway in an antechamber, where a metal shape shone with captured firelight. An anvil. Upon it lay a fuller, a blacksmith's tool. A talisman hung around Vulcan's neck on a chain. The metal felt cool, despite the lava it had undoubtedly been exposed to.
Did I...
forge it? Yes, you did. You laboured for several hours on it, though you shared nothing of what went into its creation.
Vulcan turned back to regard the old man.
I remember nothing of this.
But you do remember everything else, don't you, Vulcan?
Vulcan frowned, looking down to his leathern hands, blacksmith's hands, as if the sight of them might fill the space in his memory regarding the talisman. It appeared to be ornate, fashioned from a gilded metal that had withstood the mountain's heartblood. A drake's fanged visage formed a boss at its middle, and around it were arranged seven hammers.
They are called black smiters, he murmured. Nocturnian makers and metal shapers since the eldest days, since before my father found me.
Your father? Prompted the old man.
My creator, Vulcan said. I am his warrior, a general in his war. I remember Istvan, and then...
His face darkened at the memory.
I felt light and pain, he muttered,
gently tracing the talisman's artistry with his fingers.
Macrag. I was on Macrag. The spear. The fulgurite.
He let go of the talisman to reach for the shard impaling his chest, stopping just short of touching it. Vulcan's gaze met that of the old man's, whose eyes had not yet left the Primarch.
I am Vulcan. I died. I really died and have come back.
He remembered part of an old Nocturnian proverb about the dead, that they could never come back. Not the same. It boded ill. The old man gestured beyond his perch of stone to the other side of the vast lava sea. Following his gesture, Vulcan's gaze alighted on a curve of night-black rock jutting like a fin from the magma, almost fully submerged. He had not seen it before, but knew it had always been here. Strange runes had been etched into its surface, and they glowed faintly.
You must take the shadowed road, Lord of Drakes. It leads to a fell place, but that is your path.
He appeared sad, but resigned to this truth.
My path?
Your fate?
Vulcan turned sharply.
What do you know of it?
he asked, suddenly angry. "Likely you are a figment of my fevered mind. I have experienced this before."
"I assure you I am real, and what I say is the truth. You know this, Vulcan."
He jabbed a finger at the stone.
"This is a gate. An Eldridge gate, you might say. A border between realms."
"And I must cross this gate."
"Do you feel your strength returning yet, Vulcan?"
Vulcan looked down as he thought on that, then clenched his fist.
"Yes."
"Good. Below this cavern is a vault. You will need to breach it in order to cross the gate."
Vulcan looked down and saw the beginnings of another path, swallowed by lava but leading down from the plateau towards where the gate must be.
"How?"
The old man gestured back to the anvil.
"You forged more than just a talisman, Lord of Drakes. Look closer."
A great hammer lay upon the anvil, a two-handed weapon with the head of a snarling drake at one end and a jutting spike at the other.
"Erdrakul."
Its name echoed in Vulcan's mind.
"The Burning Hand."
"You must descend into the fire, to the very nadir of this basin, and shatter it."
"And reveal what lies beneath."
"Yes, but not yet. Your sons are coming."
Vulcan nodded.
"My sons."
He placed his left hand against the rough wall of the magma chamber.
"Nocturne is slipping back into slumber."
He let out a long, calming breath.
"Deathfire," he said, turning. "Why am I here?"
But the old man was gone, and Deathfire was silent again. A storm raged beyond the shelter of the mountain. Vulcan staggered from a fissure in the rock, right into the teeth of it. Pyroclastic clouds swept low and aggressively across the desert, bringing with it ash and stinging cinder. Vulcan barely felt it, but still huddled within his cloak against the hot wind. His strength had yet to return fully, and exposed to the fury of the storm, he realized just how weak he had become. He fell as an arc of lightning speared from the roiling red heavens above. It earthed 7 times, each blow more violent than the last, until a massive crater of black glass stood in its wake. Vulcan stood at its still steaming edge and crossed the smoke pall heedlessly, occasionally stumbling, deafened by the roar of eruption and the crack of sundered earth. The shadow of a city loomed ahead, large and forbidding. An immense gate was visible despite the distance and the dark, but a crackling void shield dome was the city's true defense. Lightning struck once more, unleashing a bright, viridian flash that flowed across the shield, its curvature revealed in light. An impression of towers and walls was quickly lost to shadow as the energy died away. Ozone stung the air a few seconds later. The city fell back into darkness. Thunder bellowed, a displeased god at odds with nature, as a great tectonic upheaval took place. Vulcan felt it through his bare feet, a trembling that grew into a ferocious quake. A great fissure opened up in the ground, a maw of spewing sulphur vapour and steam, accompanied by a violent phreatic roar. It almost swallowed Vulcan back into the earth, and he had no desire to begin the long climb again. He staggered from its path, the air thick with ash that clung to his body and amassed around his feet so densely that he sank down into its depths, head bowed, humbled by Nocturne's fury. And there he stayed, until the mountain stilled and the earth quieted, and the time of trial ended. A distant thrum of engines woke him. Vulcan opened his eyes, disturbing a hardened layer of ash. It broke and flaked away, and the desert appeared before him. Swathes of smoke and thicker agglomerations of ash scudded across the Aridian plain, driven by winds coming off the Acerbian Sea to the north, obscuring the horizon. 3 hovering silhouettes, their outlines trembling in the heat, emerged from a long grey pall. Billowing dust clouds spewed out in the wake of their air intakes. The sight reminded Vulcan of a seaborne ship spearing through the ocean, or a narwhale on the hunt. A Leonid, native to the plain, fled at the silhouette's approach.
The creature retreated to a rocky promontory, content to watch, unaccustomed to a greater predator in its hunting ground. Vulcan's eyes narrowed. Sky hunters, he realized, on scimitar-pattern jet bikes. He was remembering the craft, the creatures, Nocturne. They were seeking something urgently. Why else take jet bikes? Not him. It could not be him. His sons believed him dead. He tried to lift his hand to hail or beckon, but it resisted as if an anvil held it down.
I am too weak.
It had to be the climb. It had taken him hours to summit the crag, and then hours more to find the fissure in the mountain's flank. He could see them clearly now. His head felt heavy, his bones ached. Huddled in ash, wrapped in a hooded mantle of drake hide, Vulcan stayed still. They were coming. At last, the lead jet bike slewed to a halt, several meters away. The rider quickly dismounted. He ran across the plain, heavy boots forging deep impressions in the ash, hulking scale-green armor worn as effortlessly as a lightweight huntsman's cloak. The jet bike hovered, near silent, gently bobbing up and down. Vulcan heard the low throb of gravitic impellers and the soft rasp of displaced earth. The warrior slowed, the urgency of his footfalls decreasing, crunching shards of rapidly formed obsidian glass beneath him. Vulcan bowed his head, no longer able to hold it up. He grasped the shard in his chest, the fulgurite. It burned still, but the pain kept him awake. He could feel his body responding, his miraculous physiology re-knitting wounds, purging atrophy, restoring vigor. His grip tightened.
Brother,
Vulcan heard the warrior utter, not to him, but to one of his companions. They were only a few strides distant now. The other two had closed, dismounting swiftly to catch up to the leader.
Nemion?
Asked the warrior of Vulcan.
They do not know me. They think I am dead. They think I am...
The name brought an unwelcome pang of grief as Vulcan recognized it. A last few footfalls brought the warrior to within touching distance. Vulcan heard his approach, the soft growl of power armor, the low metal grind of a gauntlet's whirring fingers reaching for him, the smell of oil and ash and heat.
Is he alive?
Asked another, farther away but also closing. The first warrior paused, realizing his error.
He knows something is wrong, but he does not know what.
Then he fell to his knees as Vulcan looked up. The warrior gasped.
In the name of... Vulcan. He sees me now.
The others stopped, one, then another, until all three regarded him. Though they wore their helms, snarling, draconic, belligerent, Vulcan knew their mouths would be agape, their eyes wide behind red flaring slits. He stood, shrugging off the ash cloak and letting it cascade from his mantle. He felt unsteady, but gripped the fulgurite in a firm hand as he regarded them. His joy almost went beyond words, but he found two in that moment.
My sons...
Themis. Vulcan knew the city of warrior kings well, as he knew all of the sanctuary cities. He had helped raise them, fought for them, buried their warriors, seen them sundered and then thrive again. Barak Zaitos had come from a Themian tribe. His broad neck and stern disposition made his provenance obvious. The drakes shaved into the crimson hair on either side of his head suggested he had been a hunter, though he had the gait and demeanour of a brawler. Vulcan knew this too, as the warrior regarded him with quiet awe. The four of them, the Primarch and three of his sons, stood in sight of the city. The warriors had not strayed from his side since being reunited on the Iridian Plain at the foot of Mount Deathfire. They had not spoken either, not until Zaitos said,
"An apothecary is on his way from the Draconia's Gate. He will be close by now."
"Tell him to turn back." "That you were mistaken, Barak," Vulcan replied. "None other than you three must know I am here."
He eyed them in turn. A hot wind blowing down off the slopes disturbed the edges of the Primarch's drakehide coat and filled a brief silence.
"Why not, my lord?"
asked Igon Gargo. A blacksmiter, obvious from the deepening of his brow and the burn scars across his cheeks and nose. Heavy shoulders encroached upon a thick neck. Shorter than Zytos, he had shaved white hair and a thin beard that ran down his chin. It reminded Vulcan of white ash. All three, perhaps out of respect, or perhaps because they would only believe what the naked eye told them, had removed their helms. Gargo's helm was particularly ornate, and hung on a strap of Sarok leather from his weapons belt. Both his arms were bionic. The right looked crude by comparison, though evidently functional. The left carried Tekel's mark, a masterpiece of artifice.
"Your resurrection, it is miraculous. The Legion must be told."
Zytos quietly ordered the apothecary to return to the Draconius Gate, citing a false alarm and apologizing for his rashness. Gargo frowned, looking from Primarch to Battlebrother.
"I do not understand."
"Nor do I," said Zytos.
"But if it is Vulcan's will..."
Vulcan nodded and turned to the last of the three.
"Hattok."
Ibidemi bowed, barely resisting the urge to kneel.
"Lord Primarch,"
he said, his deep voice almost a growl.
"Do you believe as your brothers do? Am I selfish to ask this of you?"
Hattok Ibidemi raised his eyes, but not his chin. The thin crest of hair dividing his scalp had been dyed a darker green than his scalloped armour.
"I believe Artellus Numion died so you could live. I now carry his sword. I do not know how he did this, or why it happened. I only know what I can see. I see my Primarch. I hear his voice. Do you wish to know what I believe, father?"
He raised himself up again, emotion making him tremble.
"I believe Vulcan lives."
Vulcan embraced him, father to son. He embraced them all and felt the pain of the last few years lessen.
"Heed me," he said. "Say nothing of this. Tell no one. The Legion must think I am dead."
"But Lord Primarch,"
Gargo began. Zytos gave him a fierce glance, but Vulcan raised his hand for calm.
"I need your trust, my sons."
"And you have it," said Zytos. "But I do not know what to make of this."
Vulcan gave a somber smile.
"I expect this is not the reunion you envisaged when I, and not Numion, came out of the desert. But it is my will. Horus and his kind believe me dead. Let them. My father has generals aplenty. That was never my true purpose, but I had to die first to understand that."
Vulcan smiled again, wry and a little indulgent.
"Ever curious is my father's humour. Even standing before you, reborn, I still do not fully grasp his intent. There are pieces missing. A plan. But I know I will never return to this war at the head of a legion. It saddens me, for nothing would give me greater joy. But the sons of Nocturne are not unfamiliar with sacrifice. This is mine. I now ask it of you also."
Zytos ran a hand across his shorn scalp, squinting against the sun.
"Should this honour not be Raitan's? Or at least one of the Igniacs? Had Tekel not already left Prometheus?"
Vulcan rested a hand on his shoulder.
"It is you who ventured out into the desert, Barak. You and Igon and Hattok. You who protected me as I slept across the ruin storm. You who brought me back."
"Numion did that,"
Zytos replied, failing to hide a tremor of emotion in his voice.
"Numion chose you, as I chose him. He did not undertake his task alone."
He released Zytos to speak to his sons as one.
In the earliest days of Nocturne, before my father came and gave us the gift of illumination, the gift of Imperium, tribal chieftains had a name for their closest warriors and seneschals. They called them Draxwood, sword dragons. I name you three the Draxwood. I am in need of sword dragons, of your brotherhood.
The sea wind blew a mournful chorus across the desert. It seemed to linger over long before Zaitos stepped up to the Primarch. For a supposed savage of Themis, he was both noble and proud.
What would you have us do?
Return here, after three suns have passed. Return to the mountain. Bring a ship, small, fast. Our leaving must remain unnoticed.
And to where are we bound, my lord?
Asked Zaitos.
The shadowed road, said Vulcan,
echoing the old man's words.
An old, forgotten path.
Gargo and Abidemi exchanged a glance. Zaitos had doubts too, but his love and obedience for his Primarch overrode them.
We would follow you unto death if necessary, my lord. I will not lie, though. I have questions, many of them, and I still grieve for Numion, even as I grieved for you. I cannot claim to fathom what has brought this day to pass. I am ignorant of the deeper secrets of the universe, and confess I remain bewildered. But you need not ask for what is freely given.
He reached behind him and pulled forth an ornate thunderhammer strapped to his armor's power generator.
Upon this hammer I swear it!
Abidemi reached for his scabbard and drew the blade within.
I will take the path with you, my lord,
he declared hoarsely.
And you, Aegon?
Vulcan asked the last of his sons. Gargo turned, and Zaitos looked about to reprimand him when he reached for a spear lashed to the side of one of the jetpikes. He returned and thrust its heel deep into the earth, so the spear tip stood proud and shone in the sun.
I fear no shadows, not with the Primarch by my side.
Vulcan nodded, stern, fiercely approving.
Three sons, he said,
letting his gaze fall on each and every one of his legionaries.
Three sons. It could not merely be coincidence.
Then he turned and slowly trudged back to the mountain. The growl of engines came to him a few minutes later as his sons departed, back to the Draconius Gate and the lies they would have to tell their comrades about why they had gone into the desert and what they had found. After a short climb up the crags, Vulcan found the fissure again. He descended deep into smoke and flame and returned to the chamber. His hammer awaited him, standing upright, perfectly balanced, its head touching the earth, its haft beckoning. Nocturnians believed that when a weapon was forged, it not only gained form, but also animus. It became, for want of a better term, conscious. Such stories were told by the elder blacksmiters, but as he beheld the hammer and gripped the haft, Vulcan could believe it too. He found his strength and reached for the fulgurite lodged in his chest, wrenching it free as if he were drawing out a thorn. The Primarch let out a breath and felt the agony of the excision fade with it. One hand still on the hammer's haft, he took a knee and reverently laid the stone shard down. It held the Emperor's grace, and so it was the Emperor in Vulcan's eyes. Then he stood and regarded the sea of lava and the jutting edge of the Eldritch Gate just visible above its bubbling skin. Gripping the hammer in both hands, Vulcan swept it around in a half arc. There was work to be done.